Hello, and welcome to Social Design Insights, the weekly podcast that brings you the leading voices of the social design movement from the fields of architecture, engineering, planning, art, and whoever else we can find who's out there trying to make the world a better place. I'm your host, Eric Kessel. Last week, Mario Nuno do Rosario of Arquitectura y Planeamiento Limitada spoke at length about the history of Mozambique and gave us a rich historical framework around how their practice got started. In that episode, they offer critical insight into how international aid works and how we can think about architecture differently. You can find it and all past episodes on our website at currystonefoundation.org. This week, we're back with the second half of my interview with Mario Nuno, which was recorded at their office while I was doing some research in Mozambique. In this interview, they also taught me a new phrase, Fukashaswili. Fukashaswili? Sorry, Mario Nuno, I'm trying. Fukashaswili means wake up, it's a new day. And it's been my mantra ever since I met those two. Mario Nuno reminded me of what design is all about. So I'm going to pass it over to the interview and let's get this started.
Do you feel like the sort of criticisms that you're discussing now have voice in this international community? I mean, when you speak to these international agencies about these sorts of issues, are people listening? Are they starting to listen?
I had that experience here in very different scenarios, but the workers or the agents of those agencies, they like to hear, but they are not allowed to implement that.
They're good listeners, but they're not invited to implement the lesson.
I was invited one day. Here in Maputo, there are coordination between the donors, aid agencies of all embassies. And one day, I was invited to speak about our NGO. They said, we have only 5 minutes for you.
5 whole minutes.
5 minutes to say what you are doing. And so I went, there was 40 embassies in the meeting, and I talked 3 minutes. I said, we are doing with communities, entered by the culture. We have to learn the culture because we have different cultures. The self-help is not something that I go to teach them, because every community has a self-help system. And so we learn what is the ways they do the self-help and start to rebuild build the new infrastructures for direct use of the community, like primary school or health center. We finance our costs, administration costs, all the money that we receive from the churches, from the Swiss corporation, 100% for the community. Our cars, our salaries, everything is paid by the members of the NGO. Finally, I was there 40 minutes because everybody... And we said we are building 1/3 of the cost that Minister of Education says that it costs. And that means community profits or temporary income. We use the carpenters from the community. We bring 2 or 3 volunteers only to help to organize the system. Never disappear anything, because the cement, the tools, remains with community. We pray near the oldest tree with the eldest family, asking the permission of the ancestors. If you want to steal something, you have to go to the tree and explain why you don't want, and that everybody understands. And so in here, during all these years, we don't have the problem of disappearance. And that, after we stay 40 minutes talking about that, because they said, but in our projects, everything disappear. Everybody steals paper, cement. And after 3 years, we are in conflict with community. And we observed that you, after 10 years, you continue to be part of the... I said, but the respect for the local structure, to be accepted part of the family, is the key issue. You come from outside, you bring photocopies, you bring cars, you say you have a car and you don't have a car, and you start to divide the community. I understood that they understand personally what I'm talking about, but the embassies, the NGOs, they have not the same agenda. And that is the key issue of the resilience. One of the communities decided to call to that action Fukashaswili. Fukashaswili means wake up.
Wake up.
Yeah. A new day.
Wake up, it's a new day.
We discover that we don't need to wait for anybody. We can solve our problems. That was the idea. Wake up. We open our mind. And that is the resilience key issue.
That's beautiful.
And up to now, it's called Fukazishili. It's a tree. They designed a tree with everybody working on the tree.
I can send you the picture of the first sculpture that they did on the training.
We have a page in Facebook. Yeah. We can see a lot of documentary.
Yeah. No, we have a Facebook for the NGO.
Oh, okay.
And so we can see a lot of photos and...
From all this experience...
The texts are in Portuguese, but...
Yeah. A key lesson there was resilience is not about how to build, it's how to help communities learn how to do better what they already do. We usually have a saying, Mario taught me the saying is, nobody needs you to go tell them how to build a house. Populations have been building their houses for 10,000 years. They might need your help how to improve slightly their process to make it last longer. But also in that aspect, a lot of communities, a lot of traditional building methods are so adequate to the place where that community lives in that they're already very resilient. So what they need from you is how to improve, or where you can improve that process in slight aspects to make it last longer, to reduce the times that they have to repeat. We have an example there in this province that we're working on, in Zambezia. Zambezia has a very sedentary population for thousands of years. So their houses, their huts, are mud-walled huts.
Adobe. Yeah.
And they last throughout all the climate attacks. These international agencies coming in are trying to invent the wheel. And they find a half point with traditional construction methods and new construction materials. And at the end of the day, they have something that's not a properly built structure. So you're actually trying to help the community, and at the end of the day, what you build as a foreign aid partner does not last. And people say, but we use their methods, and you look at both houses. The people in the locality don't question this new building because this emblemed agency came and built this.
Oh, they have an official seal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't do it that way, and theirs last longer. So the resilience issues is a very fashionable word, but populations have been resilient for thousands of years. It's more, we have to learn how communities have lived more than we have to teach them how to live.
I worked several times in the rescue teams from flooding. Once we arrived in one very remote place, and the army arrived and say, everybody out of the river, quickly, because tomorrow we'll be flooded. We know it. How you know it? We are warning you now. No, the IPOs, 2 days before they left the river. That means that...
It's a warning system.
It's a warning system.
The water is coming.
You are late. Because the IPOs, when they go out of the river, is because they feel the river. Probably, I don't know, the vibration or something.
Yeah. So the populations in those areas have a recovery method. Now in modern times, because we, the modern capital people, go there to warn them about flooding, they can say, well, nobody told us and we got caught off guard. But they have a system that has been cut. There is another new term coming up, which is the earth-based traditions. That New Zealand has a study about that. They're trying to recover what has been forgotten about their connection with Mother Earth. It's the same process here and the same process with U.S. indigenous people. You cut the connection, so you don't know.
I had a terrible experience on that 500 kilometers from here in Nyambad province. Is a province without rivers. So we have only boreholes with salted water. And so they know that years 3 and 8 are raining years. They have some water. If it fails, it means the following year will be a very drought. And so the weakest people, like the weakest women and kids, starts to migrate to Zimbabwe. And they walk 120 kilometers. Along the way, by the name, old communities help them with a meal to sleep, and next day they must go. By the names, they can check if it is a relative or not. And after the drought season, they will come back. In that year, 1980, the old food program came by sea and brought everybody with trucks to the coast to be fed. but they have funds for 2 months of food. After 2 months, what to do? They cannot migrate because they are very weak, but they have no more food. And around that camp, there was 100 deaths per day. And nobody could do anything. We tried to install 10 trucks transporting water, but food you cannot invent. That means instead of helping them to go to Zimbabwe quicker and distribute it by the communities, each family can support 2-3 other people, to concentrate 2,000 people in one place. And it was supposed to have food for everybody, but if you don't have, what to do? And that means that they know exactly when the flooding or when the drought season arrives. And that tradition, if you can learn it, if you have a lot of money, okay, sit here, you are my invitees, I will support you for 1 year. But if you don't have it, leave them to be resilient as they know, using the modern word.
It means you can still help. There's still space for help. These are traditional people. They understand borders, they understand administrative borders, but they have their tradition. You can help that tradition happen in more legal ways, legal in modern terms. You can establish routes, you can establish support, but that movement needs to happen as it has happened for thousands of years. We have that experience also with health centers and the schools. You go to a community and sometimes they don't want the school you want to build there. They don't want the health center. They want a new granary or they want a church. So all this help, foreign help, needs to ask, what do you need? Do you really need what I want to give you? And this concept, asking you if you need what I want to give you, is very foreign for people that come from the Northern Hemisphere. So I'm here to give you this. Why don't you want it? Nobody turns the question around.
Well, I guess the other part that's interesting is that, you know, those decisions are made in some central place, right? So someone in New York or Geneva does a study and says, you know, this particular village needs a well. So they send someone to set up the well, and then the villagers say, no, we need a granary, we don't need a well. And, you know, what happens from there?
Yep.
That's it. I have experience making, we built some centers to accommodate people, handicapped people by the landmines, to come to the city to receive prostheses. It was a handicap international from France. And so they said, these guys don't eat properly. We can have a field to teach them how to plant veggies, like tomato, to improve the quality of the diet. They received the prostheses and they came back and they said, okay, you can take the seeds to your village. They said, no, I cannot plant in my village. I said, but why not? You have to learn to improve it. I said, no, but if I plant a fruit tree, I have to cut it before the fruit comes. Because if it comes, the fruit, we will have some deaths in the family. They said, this is nonsense. But we investigated that. In that region, there are no water. And each sheep knows the water of the boreholes is sufficient for my people. You want to come here, you can stay 2 or 3 days, but you have to leave because...
I cannot sustain your presence.
The environment cannot sustain much more. And if you plant fruit trees, that family will have fruit, but water will be consumed by the fruit tree and the others will die because they don't have water. And that natural balance, it's not... missing acknowledge is they know exactly how much water they have each year to sustain along the year the people. And so
we are the missing link. We, the people that live in urban areas and have all these modern methods, we are the missing link. They have the links. They have the system. They might need help improving their system. But when we take our knowledge and try to impose on them, we are creating the missing link. The NGO has another program that was the $1 per animal program. When all these organizations were trying to feed these people, our NGO, developed a program. Say, how much can you spare, you as a person, a month to help others? $1. $1 is the cost of a chicken. So
on that school program, we decided we reserve money for the volunteers. They can pay as salaries. They can, and they never decided to pay salaries. They said, let's keep that money and buy a sewing machine or to buy
for the community. So,
and so we decided part of that money. There was a program with the Minister of Agriculture generating goats and chickens genetically purified. It means it's not modified. It's
crossing
local
breeds,
types of chickens, make it stronger to be reproducers. And so they resist to everything. And so we decided to buy $5. It's one gallon.
One cock. One rooster and four hen.
Two chickens that scratch the soil and two chickens that do not scratch the soil, only peck.
Yeah.
So they recommend to have that group of five. We gave to the best, to the volunteers that participated more on the works elected by the community. There was 10 guys receiving five of these animals with one condition. The first 10 newborns must be given to the next family.
So it was a pay-it-forward system. You get it, you raise it, you maintain it, and you give it forward.
And how did it work out? Did everybody eventually get chickens?
Yeah. The big issue with our NGO is that we created a self-sustainable program. So we were in touch with the communities up to a certain level. Up to now, you hear about the program ongoing without our presence. There's a resource facility in Inharim that's still there, maintained by the people that don't require us to go there every month. So the principle of the NGO was to set up a self-sustainable program that could be run by the communities and kept running by the communities.
That was one of the issues of the auditors. We had a lot of money from Swiss Corporation, and every 3 months we have an auditor coming from Nairobi and visiting the sites. And one of the comments is, but they have done alone. They never spoke about you.
That's the point.
I have not see your symbol in the school. This is
when
you are recognizing that we achieve our object.
When inaugurating a school, they would say, we built the school.
Yeah.
There were some guys from Maputo that came to give us ideas, but we built the school.
You're listening to Social Design Insights. We hope you've been enjoying these thoughts from Mario Nuno do Rosario of Arquitectura y Planeamiento Limitada. But now that we've thoroughly explored the practice of development chickens, we're going to take a quick break. I know some of you are thinking, hey, this is a design show. What do these scratching chickens have to do with design? When we get back, Mario is going to answer exactly that question. He's going to do so quite poetically. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more Social Design Insights after the break. Welcome back to Social Design Insights. We've been speaking with Mario Nuno do Rosario of Arquitectura y Planeamiento Limitada about the intrinsic resilience of indigenous communities all over the world. Now, let's settle that chicken issue.
You know, one of the things that I'm always curious about is that there's a lot of criticism, right? There's a lot of people out there that will point to your chicken program and say, that's not architecture. What are you doing? How do you respond to that criticism?
The objective, it was not to build schools, it's to build communities after the war. And that includes, you have different sections of the men of the community. They said, no, I cannot be a volunteer. The governor must come and do the school. And the women take the management of the school. They said, sorry, our kids need the school. We'll do it. If you don't want to, can go. And so we need to respond to a certain number of questions, like we have done an action teaching how to cook with the sun, with local materials, how to make a heater for the food, how to save fuel with a card box with palha, como se diz? With
straw.
Straw. You put on fire for 5 minutes to boil. You put the pan inside and you close it and you can go to work. When coming back, everything is cooked and not burned because there are no fire. Nobody used that before, but it opens the mind that there are a lot of things that you never imagine. And the goats and the chickens and everybody solves their own problems and they are available to participate in community projects. That is part of the ownership of the infrastructures. If you go there, you see a lot of those, included the color of the school they are. They can...
This is worsened by the screen, but that's another aspect of this project.
This is the NGO, yeah?
Yeah, this is NGO. AMDU. And in principle, what you are doing throughout the with all these programs is helping urban development. It's rural, it's always rural, but the rural aspect of it does not need your help.
We are reducing the ruralization of the cities. If you take out these people, if they discover they're coming back to their village, they have a better life because they can plant, they can have the animals. It's much better life than in a city that you have to survive without nothing.
So is this an issue to deal with some of the urbanization problems?
Yeah.
This mindset education is what's required to help people moving into urban areas, gentrifying spaces. If you can cross that bridge into educating people how to use a urban space better by helping them live better in their own communities, in the long term, you can establish a solution. Otherwise, you're just maintaining the problem.
Only after 20 years, the Minister of Education called me and said, tell us what is the secret. The schools built by community are resilient to all cyclones. And we are doing with consultants, international contractors. It does not resist to more than 90 kilometers per hour.
It was just after a small cyclone, and it blew the roof off a lot of facilities built with the World Bank Fund. So they wanted to know the secret of these schools, why these schools resist to climate aggression.
And I said, there is no secret. The first secret is the engineers must be engineers, of course. The second is the community must be involved in the supervision of these projects because they know that what is wrong. How the consultant does not know what is wrong? No responsibility probably is one of the key issues. It's not a designing issue. We can offer that design to increase the number of schools that you can build per year, and they adopted, in fact, our...
We offered the full...
And they triplicated the quantity of schools done by here. But it was amazing that after 20 years, they wrote down a letter to us saying, please come back into... The third question is the business installed, the corruption installed between the international NGOs, international agencies, bilateral and multilateral cooperation, and the government officers is the problem of this system. UNESCO, with Minister of Education, they said if you don't build 5,000 classrooms per year during 10 years, because the population is exploding, after 10 years we'll have
a huge decrease, the deficit in education.
And so in that time, they are building 500 classrooms per year only. With this system that we offer, they could do around 1,200, 1,500. It's not enough. But they cannot go further because everybody are taking money from the fund. And so with the agreement of the embassies, the agencies...
Everybody turns a blind eye on how you applying
and
the
that
fund.
Is, I understand that is the system. It's not our system. Our system is idealistic, it's very interesting, but the human being in all these institutions, foreign agencies and national government, they need that to survive.
This kind of solution, we're taking this school into that school.
The communities never took more than 3 months to finish the school.
Really?
Because since they see this 3D drawing, that is the structure, They take 2 days to install this structure. Everybody can see the school. We need to fill up.
So this is a simple Lego. The government was surprised at how these schools, this the teachers, school teachers' house, how they could build this in less than 3 months, where the government contracts go for 12 months, 18 months.
Now stopping to think, it's nice, this experience, but it's difficult to replicate because it's, if you don't have ethical boundaries, it's like the kids asking for money on the road instead of living with the family. They have family, but it's, emotionally it's much better to run between the cars and ask you for something to eat or something to...
I have two practical examples of that. We had a kid that washed our cars here. He was washing the cars, so I paid for his primary school education, which is costs $100 for 6 years education, next to nothing. He himself worked enough to get himself a driver's license, and in 8 years he became a driver, and he's now a driver. Now I'm doing the same with the second one that showed up to fill his place. So sometimes you need only to help people carry on doing what they're doing in better quality than actually trying to make them change what they're doing. And it's the principle of this. I put this photo up because of the colors. Everybody does foreign aid buildings in white or gray. In our private practice, we also have this example, which is the French school, International School of Maputo. All classrooms have a different color. And you see the original line there is not horizontal. It's wavy. All parents of this school, the school is run by association of parents, are foreigners and are aid workers. A lot of them are aid workers. They could not understand why so many colors, why so much happiness.
Did they actually say that? Why so much happiness?
Today, after 15 years, they cannot imagine a different school like different. Even the roof, like the sea.
The concept of the school was the atoll. Because of the bikini atoll, this is coming up.
They decided to call the school the sun, le soleil,
the sun, because the sun shines
for everybody. Like the French language is for most of the students are not French, are from French Africa, Canadian, Mozambicans, and so they decided. So the school is the sun. It's circular like the sun, with a sundial in the middle. Related with the Indian Ocean, that is the cross of cultures. And so the Indian Ocean is the roof with the waves that makes the sun shadow like the waves. And and nobody could imagine how the classroom can be not rectangular. And now they discovered that this circular shape.
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah.
This is in Maputo. It's close to where we drove by yesterday.
Near the American Embassy, the new American Embassy. And they have a fixed budget. They said, you cannot spend much more than, it was $1,153.
Very specific amount.
I said, okay.
Very specific amount.
Because the funds were obtained by the association. So the French government...
They had three small schools. They sold out.
This is another tough subject for foreign aid. It's a
this French school
open-air toilet. It's in a French school. Okay. Here, with our climate, makes no sense to have public toilets that are closed.
Yeah.
With mechanical ventilation.
Right.
This fully open, sun get... You cannot see because this wall sits 1.9 meters off the ground outside, so you can't see into it. It's completely open, so always ventilated, covered from the rain. Only when they have extremely strong rain does it rain a bit inside, but always sunny. So it's always disinfected. If we apply this in all our hospital, rural hospitals, schools, everywhere, this concept, use the environment to help maintain the space. Foreign aid people have this problem with natural ventilation and natural light.
You've been listening to Social Design Insights with Eric Kessel. I'd like to thank my guests of the week, Mario Nuno do Rosario of Arquitectura y Planeamiento Limitada, for giving us their time and sharing with us such a broad and profound investigation of architecture and resilience in Mozambique. I hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as I did. For me, it was a reminder that design philosophies don't need to be esoteric. Put people first, design around the lamb, use local materials, respect local traditions. This isn't some new thing that was invented by the social design wonks at last year's conference. It is, in fact, the way a lot of people have been designing for millennia, even before we had the professions that we know today. At the tail end of the interview, you may have noticed that Mario and Nuno were referencing some pictures that they were showing me. This interview was recorded live in their office in Maputo, but I'm not selfish about visuals. All of the reference projects can be found on our website, where you also find links to Mario and Nuno's work and practice. Next week, we're actually headed way down south to the Dogs Bar in St. Kilda, Australia. Why there? Well, architecture doesn't just happen at fancy colloquia and side of design blogs. Sometimes it happens in the neighborhood pub, and you gotta go where the conversation is. We hope that you'll join us for that. If you have any feedback on the show, ideas for guests, or just want to chat, you can write to me at eric@socialdesigninsights.com. That's E-R-I-C @socialdesigninsights.com. Social Design Insights is produced by Baruch Zeichner, and at the break we're listening to La Loca by the artist Shova, which is also a new favorite. Social Design Insights is an initiative of the Curry Stone Foundation. If you haven't already, please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just look for Curry Stone FDN for all the latest news on social impact design.